Welcome.
Welcome to Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday Night Alcoholics and God, a speaker step series. We've got Kat with the joke for the evening. Welcome, Kat.
Cat alcoholic. Okay. An alcoholic had sworn off drinking for the 100th time to his wife. She told him this was his very last chance. He did fine for a couple weeks, but then he came with his friends to a bar. Sure enough, one drink led to 1,000. He even threw up all over his shirt. "What will I do now?" he asked his pals. "She'll see this and she'll know that I'm drinking." "No problem," said one. "Tell her you stopped here with us, drank a couple soft drinks, and a drunk puked on you." "I'll do it," explained the alky. When he got home, his wife was about to yell at him, but he held up his hand and explained he was innocent and a drunk puked on him. "See, he gave me even $10 to pay for dry cleaning," he said, reaching in his pocket and waving the money. The wife frowned and said, "Why are you holding two $10 bills then?" "Oh, that one? He's my pants too."
Thanks, Kat. Thanks, Kat. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Andre. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation. So please take a moment to get situated. Turn off all devices that might and will make noise and will distract others. Take this time to get connected with God. Let the craziness of the day drift away and ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. Is everyone ready? All right, so let's start the meditation. Do the fog light prayer. You have the little bookmarks on the seat right in front of you, or we have it here off to the side. So God,
let your love shine through me like a fog light, so those who are lost safely die and find your love through me.
All right, there is a solution from the big book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree, and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great fact this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. And I've asked Abel to read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it's kind of important to know what one is. So where's Abel? Perfect.
spiritual experience. The terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading show that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have been tapped an unsuspected inner resource which they presently identify with their own concept of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most empathically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer, Alcoholic Anonymous.
All right, please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so set your phones to airplane mode, meeting mode, or just simply turn them off. And now we're going to go ahead and introduce our speaker, Peter. This is his 11th session tonight, so please help me welcome Peter.
Okay. My name is Peter, I'm a recovered alcoholic. I'm grateful to be alive and sober. I'm part of a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous, and again, thank the group for having me. Week 11, we have one more to go, and it's been a blast thus far. I thank everyone for giving me some latitude in my sharing without getting up and walking out, and being, participating in this journey for the last 11 weeks. Most of you have been here the entire time. So I thank you for that. Very often we get to do these things, and people are very kind with their comments afterward and saying, thank you for giving me so much. But it's you who have fed me. when I get to do this. And I've learned this thing in Alcoholics Anonymous, one of those opposites, I forget what the exact word is, but you know, you do one thing and something else happens, and in order to keep, you have to give it away kind of thing. And it seems to be the more I give of myself and God continues to make me selfless, not thinking about me, not self-centered, but God-centered, the more my soul gets full. And when I'm in that place, I'm able to do better things and be more helpful to other people with all the stuff that's going on out there in the world. So I'm very grateful. June 23rd, 1988 was my separation from alcohol, and I'm a recovered alcoholic, and I'm grateful for that gift of getting recovered. And it is the first promise in the Big Book, and I get to talk about that experientially, share that with you, have the mechanics in front of us. We talk about the mechanics, and then we get to talk about what I like to call what's between the lines, the experiences. We go to point A and point B, and we can learn the information. And we can recite the information. And we can pontificate about the information. But if you look at my life, it's still a train wreck. Or I can know about the literature. I can know about the mechanics. I can teach the mechanics without a big book in front of me. But more importantly, my life has changed. And there's a God talking through us and for us and being for us. With all the things that we go through, with all the hiccups that we have in life. And for me, it started at the most desperate moment I experienced. I mean, there's one sort of fear and pain I experienced with my mom when I woke up to my mom passing in 1974. But this, my pain was a little bit different, and not because it was mine, but it was a self-imposed crisis. June 23rd, 1988, when God sobered me up, was years and years and years of abuse of alcohol, other substances, and a lifestyle that belonged in a dumpster. And so you wake up to this desperate moment. And perhaps if you're new, you don't get this, but I'm grateful for all of that. I'm grateful for the bottom, and I'm grateful for my alcoholism. Even now, I'm grateful to be an alcoholic, a recovered alcoholic, but I'm grateful for my alcoholism. Because of all of that, I'm here tonight sharing with you from my soul, not caring about how I sound. And I'll get home and pray tonight, and if God wakes me up, I will pray again, and I will do my utmost to practice those principles in Alcoholics Anonymous in all my affairs, and having a practice of being fidelity to God, fidelity in my relationships, fidelity with my friends, my male friends. I have acquaintances with women. I have friends, male friends. And I don't put anything before their friendship, like a better friend or more money. And my friends know that. It's the walk I walk. And so my life is pretty much an open book and open, and my soul is open, which is a great thing, makes me more useful. And I think I shared last week, it's not the power that I have, but it's the power that flows through me or through you outwards. But in doing that, you get bruised quickly. You get bruised easily. If you weren't so in touch, you wouldn't care what people think sometimes, but sometimes the words hurt. Sometimes the things people say, they bruise. And that's just the price you pay sometimes for freedom and to being open like that. I wouldn't want to trade that, however, because God has put me in a place of being more in touch than having a wall and no transparency. June of 88, I hated Alcoholics Anonymous. I hated God. I hated my family, and probably hated me the most. And there was a part of me that wanted to be a God lover, wanted to be one of these AA people who seemed to do fun things and have some sort of substance and traction in their life. And I wanted to be the family man. I wanted to have the wife and the house with the white picket fence. I wanted to go to Christmas at my house and sit around and sing Christmas carols, which we never do, by the way. But just that whole you know, Hallmark card, I wanted that, but I knew it was never going to happen for me. I went through life, I was sharing with some folks earlier, I went through life, and I can still do this now, we can still do this now, not seeing things as they are, but seeing things as we are. based on a lot of belief systems, ideas, attitudes, emotions, unresolved resentments, and driven by 100 forms of fear. I see things as I am, and I make an assumption on something, and I never get to see the truth, nor I get to hear the truth. And the great thing about 10 and 11, where we grow in understanding and effectiveness, where we've been split open and we've been flushed out of self. Self has, I don't know if it's completely died, but a lot of self has died. And we get to walk, what our book talks about, it's the five, hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. That's not a picture. That's literally speaking, hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. And if that seems really out there, you just haven't had that experience yet. Then you'll have the experience, I know exactly what Pete's talking about, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. I think I shared last week, I'm not good around crowds. I was at a conference this weekend, and it would look like a big wedding for the banquet. All these round tables with 10 to a table. Hi, I'm Bill. Hi, I'm Mary. And I don't know these people, and I got to get out of here. Even though they're AA members. Now, if it was an AA setup and waiting for a meeting, I'd be a lot better. But a very formal thing, I'm not good around crowds. And so God puts me in front of you to talk. I mean, it makes no sense. I didn't like any of this stuff. And I'm getting pulled. Okay, so I get to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm wondering, how am I going to fit in? How am I going to be one of these people who can sit in a chair for a whole hour and not get up once? How am I going to do this thing where you have to go speak once in a while? How am I going to confess me to a sponsor? Because they told me to get a sponsor. How am I supposed to do any of this? And how am I ever going to be like these people who believe in God? But I had to start at the beginning. That was get to a meeting, get a sponsor, and begin to pray. And like most of us, what I would do is petition God. I want, I need, and fill in the blank. I give him a laundry list, like God was some benevolent father who was going to take care of me regardless of what I've done. Give me everything I wanted, not necessarily what I needed. And if I would have got what I wanted, I'd probably be drunk or dead by now. Because I've learned God's way of giving is sometimes by saying no. Sometimes God's way of giving is by taking away. But I interpret it as God is cool. He's not giving me what I want. So he has not listened or answered my prayers. I was told as a kid, God answers all prayers. I pray for the Yankees to win the World Series and they lose in four. I said, well, God's not a Yankee fan. Which looks like it's about to happen again, but that's a... Or I pray for that new bicycle under the Christmas tree and I got a football helmet. Well, God's not listening. I wanted a new baseball glove and I got a football instead. I got nothing. So God's not listening to my prayers. Now that's as a youngster. I can be 59 as I am right now and still talking to God the same exact way. Please God, give me that relationship. Don't make her leave. Give me that money. I really deserve Powerball ticket, a win. We still petition God. And then we say God's not listening. No, God's just saying no. Because it just might kill me. So how to get it, learn and experience and be taught, how am I praying to God? Now, I want to preface this by saying any kind of dialogue with God is good. God help. God please. That's a prayer. And sometimes we put these we got to speak in Latin to God or recite, scripture to be in with God. That's nonsense. That's just ego and pride talking. But I've learned is that there's a way to speak to God. He's still going to say no. And I'm still going to think he's not listening. But if instead of telling God what I want, God, what do you want for me is a better prayer. An even better prayer is, God, what do you think that I really want? Because while I'm asking for that relationship, perhaps underneath that is, God, I don't want to feel lonely anymore. And maybe a few close friends would suffice. God, I need a lot of money. And what I really need, what God knows I need, is just a job to be self-sufficient. Self-supporting to my own contributions. And I'm shooting for the big Powerball ticket. So regardless of how long I'm sober and how many times I've gone through the work, I still got to consider myself a novice because I'm talking about God here. He's not another AA guy. He's not a sponsor. And although this God's not going to punish, I need to understand who I'm talking to. That me petitioning, I could petition over and over and over and go away disappointed. Rather than, God, what do you want for me? Where do you want me? What do you need me to do today? That's a better way to position myself to really do God's work. And here's why I say that. Because I have found when I'm doing God's work, and you know when we're doing God's work. You know when you're in the groove and you're doing God's work. I don't need attention. I don't need applause. It's chop wood and carrying water. Going out in the field, plowing the field, and God will do the growing for fun and for free. I don't need an audience to do that. And when we're doing that, everything is right. Everything is okay. We're in the saddle. That's doing God's will. And I'm usually very, very content with a lot of things. And I'm usually not concerned about what's going on out there or what the bank account looks like or what I'm driving. I'm full, spiritually full. And all those other things really don't have that much weight. Conversely, they have a ton of weight when I'm not doing God's will. So I need to seek God's will. The challenge is this. I'm seeking God's will, but who's really seeking God's will? Self, manifested in various ways. Is what had defeated me. Usually I show up to God, show up to meditation with, you always talk about that other guy. There's who's in front of you, and there's that other guy, the self guy, the egocentric, prideful, narcissistic, dopamine alcoholic. Usually that's the person praying. Usually that's the person meditating, and it's the proof is, how come I didn't get the big bang today in meditation? How come I didn't see the seas part when I meditated? How come I'm not rich after I meditated? How come I'm not feeling enlightened after I meditated? That's the self. The spirit is just meeting spirit and is okay with a few words, seeking God's will, and off we go and carry that vision into all my affairs. One is free and easy. One is a lot of work. And when I'm working hard, it's usually self looking for an effect. Huh? It's kind of like this with meditation. I'm guilty of this, especially when I was new. I would get daily reflections, 24-hour day book, Our Daily Bread, The Upper Room, this book, that book, books for males, books for single guys, Seeking God. I mean, you know, just, and I... I had all these books, these one-page books. You read the page, okay, I'm enlightened. Next book, now meditate, go meditate. And I have, you know, something set up, and I have a CD, had to get going, create that ooh in the background, you know, I'm chanting. And I had about, you know, 10 candles going at once, burning sage for all the fire department, smell like weed in the house because sage is burning. And I be banging a gong and bells and right? Now I'll meditate. And as I meditate, I'm listening to music, smelling the sage, smelling the candles, watching the candles, listening to the gong. The gong should hit again because I need that chiming effect, that after effect, to hit it one more time. So I spend 20 minutes arranging the orchestra. And the only thing that's meditating is all that stuff. The mind gets restless in meditation. It gets frustrated. Because meditation requires that I get still and do nothing other than posture and breath. And we do a couple of minutes right here, and that's just pretty much to shut the day down, which is beautiful. And okay, we're in a meeting, let's get settled in. And if you start off with 2 minutes, that's wonderful. But if I'm doing 2 minutes a day after 10 years in AA, I'm probably missing some, just gotten lazy. But if I'm doing, if I have a practice of meditation, that kind of silence, that kind of stillness frustrates the mind that needs to be active. The self, that guy needs to do something. This is too still. It's too quiet. I'm restless. I'm irritable, discontented. Let's do something. And then we do 20 minutes of meditation. All we walk away with is stillness. Nothing's happened. That's earth shattering. Just 20 minutes of stillness. So the mind gets even more frustrated. And what it does is this. See if you identify with this. We create stuff. I think the candle moved. I heard something in that meditation. Or we'll go in with a preconceived idea of what this meditation is supposed to look like and believe this actually happened. God spoke to me. I'm enlightened. So that's what the mind does. It creates things that aren't true. It gets frustrated in the silence. And what I need to understand is that in that silence, in that kind of light, it's nothing but darkness to the mind. And that doesn't feel good, but it's a wonderful thing. See, I go, into, as I've said from a million podiums, into darkness to see and silence to hear. That frustrates the mind. It needs activity. Even praying, the mind doesn't like is a set of prayers we're working with, and the mind wants to have some involvement in. The self wants to get involved in this prayer. Peter, you should be praying for this. Don't pray for other people, pray for you. And it'll justify and rationalize all that kind of self-centered stuff. And I do a lot of petitioning, but I don't listen. The great thing about doing steps 4 through 9, it puts a sledgehammer to a lot of the self, the manifestations of self. So by the time we enter the world of the spirit, there's probably some self walking through there, but a whole lot less than when we showed up at the beginning, which means we've been pried open. Which means I can begin to do a spiritual walk, really do a spiritual walk, a deeper walk, a more involved walk, and a definitely more connected walk with this power called God, who I now believe in, who I've heard from others, who I've seen in meditation. See, there's traction, there's belief, there's faith, there's experience, which covers everything. There was a Jimi Hendrix had an album out years ago called Are You Experienced? So we can talk about the album, we can talk about the music, but have you really listened to the music and experienced it? We can talk about God, we can talk about scripture, we can talk about the big, talk about AI. I know some cats will recite the traditions and the concepts. But there's nothing godly going on in there. Are we experienced? I don't seek faith. I don't seek belief. I seek experience. Seeker of experience. That's what I want. You know, when I was drinking, you can talk to me about vodka or Jack Daniels. Okay, I'm interested. But at some point, I want to drink the stuff. I want to have an experience with this thing you're talking about. Enough talking. How many of us go to meetings for years and talk a lot? We know the mechanics. We got 4,000 highlighters and markers and bookmarks and all that other stuff. And then you go give a talk, I don't hear the word God come out of your mouth once. You know why? Because you got none. There's nothing experiential about it. And 4 through 9 positions us to a place of being wide open, where if God can finally do some growing. And what happens is things begin to change. My experience has shown things begin to change even more. We will become open to many things and attached to very little. A shift in perceptions takes on a new life, where the very things I thought were important to me are no longer important to me. In fact, I will tell you, life even gets more simple. With the busyness out there, it gets really simple, because there's a simple thing I need. I need God. I've got to have God. I want to do God's will. I seek God, and everything else falls into place. Doesn't mean I'm going to be rich. Doesn't mean I'm going to hit lottery. Doesn't mean I have a great job. Doesn't mean I'm going to drive a new car. But something going on in the soul is completely different. And for an alcoholic, the other thing that's going on is I'm not even thinking about taking a drink anymore, or I'm thinking about non-conference approved dry goods, or running around behind a girlfriend or a wife's back, or cheating on my boss and embezzling. That stuff has been removed from the equation. And we'll walk with the servant's heart throughout the day. Page 62 talks about me. It's always me. Selfish, self-centered, that we think is the root of our troubles. I'm driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity. What do? I hurt you, you retaliate, and I turn around and say, what did I do? Because it's always about me. I can hurt you, but don't you dare hurt me. I can gossip about you, I'll justify that, but don't you talk poorly about me. Page 63 is a complete shift. Well, it's not about me. It's about what I can contribute. What can I give, including perhaps the money out of my pocket to make sure you're okay? That's not caretaking. That's just being a God's humble servant. That's the shift. You get a self-centered, egocentric, narcissistic alcoholic who's no longer thinking about themselves, but first and foremost thinking about, God, what do you have for me today, and how can I take care of your kids? How can I pray for my enemies? That's a ship. When we're living in that kind of light, drink and drug is now out there. It's not in here. There's no draw. There's no attraction to it. Or the old lifestyle. In fact, our skin crawls when we think of some of the old lifestyle. That's a changed person. A personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has happened. What am I going to do with this precious gift? And I pray that everyone in this room understands how precious this gift of having God is sitting on our lap or us sitting on his lap is. Because we don't own it. I, and I'll speak for myself, didn't choose God. God chose me. We really didn't choose God. God chose us. Not that we're better than, not that we're the chosen ones and we're better than someone out there. But God picked you, put your butt in an AA meeting and saved a life. We got to reprieve you in. There's work for you to do. What do I do with that? What do I do with that? I'll tell you what we do with it. We soil it to non-spiritual behavior. And that could be anything. Gambling, sex, food, money, jobs, prestige, property, acceptance of others. You know, the first time I sold my soul away? I was talking about this earlier. It was called peer pressure. We all know what that is. You're hanging out in a corner. Your friends are drinking beer. So what do? You drink beer. You know why? God forbid I'll be alone. If I'm alone, I'm going to die with no belief that God will care for me if I just went home and not drank beer. So what do? I sell my soul to be a part of something because I'm afraid of being alone. We do that as adults in AA, double-digit sobriety. How many times we're still living our parents' dream for us and we're living a lie? We sell our soul. First time I did it was 14 on the corner. I sold my soul to drink with the guys on the corner because I felt so empty in here. Rather do that than go home with me in this container. The great thing about waking up spiritually and living in the sunlight of spirit, what 10:11 talks about is, sure, we have acquaintances, we have friends, we have loved ones, we have attachments to people. It's a wonderful thing, but independent of them also. And a less prey to what others think of us. And always turning to God. Father, what do I do about this? What do I do about this person's character assassinating me? What do I do about this person being disloyal to me? What do I do about this person who's stealing from me? What do I do? I'm in a funk. I'm just in a funk. I can't get out. What do I do? See, that's a big difference than chasing and running and looking for some vicarious pleasure somewhere to fix the hole in the soul again. And all it is self. By the way, that self, it says manifested in various ways. It needs me for blood and a pulse and air. But isn't it funny how I attach myself to the self? Me get attached to this guy? Because just going home after this meeting, say, and making a little dinner, and going into my office and hitting my knees and praying and writing some inventory and going to bed. Wow, that's lame. Self says they're all going to the casino, man. Let's go do something. And I say, yes, I'm going with you. Self says, how come you're doing this after the meeting? How come you go home after work and you don't go out? And, you know, how come you're not making $1 million a year yet? And I say, you're right. And I hook into self. See, I hook into self. And that's all my resentments and my fears and all my stuff is. Remember, the big book says, to the precise extent that we permit these. In step 4, it talks about that. That I permit this stuff to happen. I allow this to happen. I make a choice to, I'm buying this. I'm buying the resentments. I'm buying the fear. So for me, it took a long time to finally hit my knees and say of myself, I am nothing. God, you do what you need to do with my life. And that's sometimes scary as heck. But at the end of the day, when it's all said and done, I'm much more grateful and a much better place for it. Step 11, it says when we retire at night, we constructively review our day. And it asked me some inventory questions. Was I resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Do I owe someone an apology? Have I kept something to myself which should be discussed with another person at once? The sins of omission. Was I kind and loving toward all, not the ones who were easy for me to be kind and loving to? What could have I done better? Was I thinking of myself most of the time? If I'm an alcoholic, there's a part of the day where I'm thinking about me. And me only. If I'm an alcoholic. I hit that part where it's all about me. Even if it's 5 minutes, it's all about me right now. I must be careful, this is so key, not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, because that would diminish my usefulness to others. That was the goal, to get us sober, to be of service to others. So I can't drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, because that's ego coming in through the back door, meaning, oh my God, I can't believe I fell short. Oh, I'm supposed to be perfect and divine by now. I fell short. I made a mistake. I'll go make an apology. I'll make an amends. I'll write some inventory. So when I get home at night, I usually close the night with some prayer. I usually close the night with some meditation. And I usually close the night with some inventory. Anything that needs to be written, I'll put on paper. I do not, and this I speak for myself, I do not put anything in here and hold on to it to tomorrow or the next day. Because I'm convinced of one thing. I'm an alcoholic, and I know what happens to me when I start suffering from alcoholism before I pick up a drink. I'm not good. I'm not good. I'm not a good guy. And the thing about this stuff, it begets more of it and begets more of it, and then suddenly you get hijacked. I'm not willing to do that when it takes me 5 or 10 or 15 minutes at night to get right with God. And when I retire at night, Tuesdays we're usually home, so we'll have an early dinner. So maybe I wrap up the day, it's only 7:30 or 8 o'clock. Doesn't mean 11 o'clock at night when TV's on and I'm laying in bed watching TV. Because I'm not getting out of bed to go pray and meditate, I'm too tired. I tried that, it doesn't work. I'll make it up to you tomorrow, God. It goes like that. I was good today. Yeah. So around 8 o'clock, I'll just dip into my office, which is like a prayer room in an office, and I'll do this 11th step. And if something arises at 9:30 or 11 o'clock, I'll fix it. There's been times where I remember I was working in Texas, and I was working probably 80 hours a week. It was 7 days a week, nonstop, maybe more hours. And I'd go back to my room, and I would wake up in the morning with a sport jacket, slacks, shirt, and tie on. I was that exhausted. I'd wake up around 6 o'clock in the morning with my clothes on like that. From pure exhaustion, I realized I missed my 11th step, and I call my sponsors, do it right now. Just do it right now. And that's what I would do when those things would happen. I'm happy to report I've been pretty disciplined to the spiritual life and have missed not many nights of writing inventory and prayer meditation. It's too important to me. What do I do when I'm going around throughout the day? How's that looking? You know, what's my going around, my GPS look like? Am I communing with God throughout the day? Or am I just asking God to give me stuff? Am I communicating, which we do all the time, or am I communing with God? Do I get my God moments or get my quiet times? You know, usually if you work for someone, you get about an hour, say, for lunch. Do I really need a whole hour to eat lunch? I eat lunch in like 5 minutes. Even when I was an employer, it takes me 5 minutes if I eat lunch. You know, half a can of soda or some water and a sandwich, I'm done. It's 5 minutes. Now what do? Most of us go smoke cigarettes or vapes and talk about people. And they get in the car, complain about traffic, going home, then walk into the meeting, totally pissed off, and you get in, how you doing? Wonderful. What a grateful day I had. So I learned a long time ago, if I have lunch or not have lunch, I take a God break. Whether it's in my office, in my car, in a restroom, I really don't care. But somewhere I can be quiet, secluded from everything else, and I will talk to my God. I will give him the respect of having some prayers first, and then I will talk, commune, and listen, and then go back to work. It's interesting, too, because you feel more vitalized, exhausted as we are. We're just on point. The same thing where maybe 20 minutes of meditation, if I didn't sleep the night before, if I get a good 20 minutes of meditation, I'm good. It's better to sometimes than 6 hours of straight sleep of tossing and turning. So it says on awakening, there's some really clean instructions here. On awakening, they don't say run out the door with a Red Bull in my hand, a carton of cigarettes. It doesn't say on awakening, get in the car and pray on the way to work. There's very clear, specific, precise, exact instructions. And if you do that, I'm not here to tell you you're wrong. I'm just telling you my experience. I can't leave the house without praying. See, because I have God's grace doesn't mean I have conscious contact with God. Because I have God's grace, it doesn't mean I'm spiritually fit. I just have an unwarranted gift. God's grace breathes life into me. But there's a difference between God's grace and conscious contact. Conscious. He's conscious. When somebody's knocked out and they're in the hospital, they come to. He's conscious, which means he's awake. Unconscious means they're not awake. And most of us are going through AA unconscious. So what Anthony Miller would talk about is sound asleep thinking we're awake. And what this work will do is make us conscious, wake us up. We have conscious contact. We're awake to this God. We're listening for it. We're seeing it. We're hearing it. We're talking about it. It's the most important thing in my life, our life, conscious contact. I'm constantly awake to God, listening for it. It's easy when you push back on me to push right back on you. It's easy for me to argue with you when you vehemently disagree with me and God says, pray. Position of neutrality, safe and protected, pray for them. I wish I can say I was 100% successful with that because I'm not. But a whole lot better than I used to be with that. Because what I've woken up to or awakened to is that quiet voice that says, go pray for them. Now I have a choice. I'm praying for God's will. And he just said, go pray for them. And my will says, no, punch them right in the mouth. Tell them off. Something like that. So here I'm praying for God's will. And then I hear it. Pray for them. Walk away. Be still. Go feed the homeless. And I do just the opposite. And I come in here saying, I don't know what God's will. God's been speaking to me all day long. And I look the other way. Because it wasn't convenient for me. It wasn't satisfying for me. On awakening, I think about the 24 hours ahead. I consider my plans for the day. I haven't left the house yet, just considering my plans for the day. And it tells me in a warning, before I begin what my day, I ask God to direct my thinking, which means I'm no longer in charge. Because when my thinking's in charge, it runs me right into the ground. And I will step on people, they will retaliate. I'm not a servant of God when I'm doing the show. That my thinking be divorced of self-pity and dishonest and self-seeking motives, which means if I'm in self-reliance, my thinking is self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motives. It's just the opposite. I'm asking God to remove those things from me because if it isn't, they're in play. That's how I operate throughout the day. Self-seeking, dishonest. It's all about me, poor me, all day long. That's how I operate. Unless God, please step in and take this from me. Separate me from me. Every day, every morning, every day and every morning. It says, when this happens, my thought life will be placed on a much higher plane. My thinking is cleared of wrong motives. It's interesting. Now they're introducing thinking. Now we're going to be inspired. We get to be inspired to live in spirit with inspiration. The difference I said last week about being motivated and living with inspiration. The great thing about when we're inspired, when we're called to do something, thoughts, the bonds are broken from thoughts. That's why it's talking about here. We're inspired. Okay, do this. I'm called to do that. And the bonds that are broken is I can't do this. I'm not smart enough. It'll never work out. I'm not rich enough. I don't live in Boca Raton, so it'll never work out. I'm not good looking enough. I don't have enough money. I'm too old. I'm the wrong color. Those are all the bonds. Go feed the homeless person. Oh, people are going to think I'm stupid. I'm going to get hurt. He looks suspicious. It's my money. I worked hard for it. They should get a job. When we're inspired, we go over, go into our pocket, and we give them money and walk away and pray for them. Big difference. One is light, one is free. One is bondage. If I'm attached to my thinking mind, I am in bondage. It says, when I go through my day, I may face indecision. I may not be able to determine which course to take. What do I do? Back to God, ask God for inspiration. A thought. What do I do here, God? What do I do? Constantly turning in order to go out. Turn in order to go out. How often am I kind to other people when they're not around me? My language about other people. I'm not talking about perfection here, like we're deities who are beyond reproach. But generally speaking, how kind and loving am I in my words or in my actions to other people? even when I want something from them. I want them. I want to motivate them. I want to get them to do something. How kind and loving am I towards them? I heard a story recently. I thought it was so profound about this very primitive tribe in South Africa. And what they would do is when they saw one of the members straying off the course, like having a son or daughters hang out with the wrong crowd and acting out and that kind of stuff. Or we do interventions, you know, to get people into treatment or to AA. The elders would gather the tribe together and they put the person who's, well, even an adult who was going off the deep end, and they'd sit them in the middle of the circle. A few hundred tribe members, they sent them in the middle of the circle. And what they would do is, and this would go on for a day, 2 days, 3 days. Instead of saying, you've done this and you're behaving inappropriately, they would all, one at a time, tell them about how that person has positively impacted their life. Something good they did during their life. How they were, when they were younger, how they were a pillar of the community. It goes on, all positive stuff they're thrown at that person for hours, for a day, for 2 days, for 3 days, until everyone has flushed out every positive thing they can think about that person. Not one negative thing is said. When it's done, using an emotional ending, the elders invite that person back into the tribe and they have a celebration. Their relapse rate is down to nil. Can I do that in a sophisticated society that we all live in with others? That primitive society has more God going on there, and they probably never saw a Bible in their entire life or a big book. Because God can communicate through big book. God can communicate, this is why I speak for myself again, through scripture. But God doesn't live in the big book or scripture. God lives in the soul. And that's what he's trying to touch. And I have a choice to follow that and let that little switch become a flame, or I can walk away from it. So I have a prayer life and a life of meditation. And if I have time, I'll just share one story, because there's been many that have come out of meditation that God has given me the God wing to let me know I got you and I'm with you and I hear your soul. And we're doing this walk together, that I'm not alone, even though many times I felt like I was alone. My book says, as I go through the day, I pause when agitated or doubtful. When, not if, which means I'm probably going to agitate and doubtful once in a while. Book says, just pause, pump the brakes, turn back to God. God, what do I do? I constantly remind myself that I'm no longer in charge. So back in the 11th step, they're telling me again, Peter, you are not running the show. Your life is none of your business. Thy will be done. In the discipline of this work, there's a tremendous amount of freedom. In the doing of this work, we succeed. It's when I'm not doing, I fall short, I fail. In doing, we succeed. In doing, we succeed. Had 2 minutes of prayer and 1 minute meditation, better than no minutes of prayer and no minutes of meditation. I said one thing to God today, help, better than not saying anything. In doing, we succeed. It's like when you try to get in shape. I like running. Every time I start, I run 20 feet. I have to dial 911. Here we go again. But it's better than not running. And I'll go at it again tomorrow and I'll do 2 blocks. And I'll do it again and I'll run a half a mile. And then again, I'm doing 2 miles. And so, you know, in doing, we succeed. God doesn't make too hard terms with those who earnestly seek him. Father, I don't know how to do this, but I'm here. I'm here. Take me like the wretch I am, the sinner I am, I'm broken as I am. I just need some guidance here. I don't know what to do. Great prayer. I'm meditating one morning. I wish in AA we'd talk, and I'll get on a soapbox a lot more about meditation. It seems to be we don't talk about it. You know, prayers, talking, meditations, listening, and then we move on. And there's so much more to this. It's actually soul food. It's food for the soul, meditation, because I'm not listening to my mind. I'm working with breath, paying attention to breath, working with posture, listening for breath, watching breath, hearing breath. It shuts me down, and then I can hear another voice. I become more energized, more useful. I was sitting in meditation, and in this meditation, it was really interesting. I see this statue, this woman, holding an infant like this. And it was an old, kind of dusty statue in meditation. I didn't think much about it. Came out of meditation, went about my day, and the next morning I went to meditate, and I found myself right in the middle of this. And when we meditate a lot, you notice there's a part where you're very conscious of meditating, posture, and breath, like we do here for 2 minutes. And you work with that. Every once in a while, you go into this, what I call, there's probably another name for it, a middle piece where you're not conscious that you're meditating and sitting there. You're taken. And then you come out of meditation. You can't plan that. You can't orchestrate it. Just the ground's fertile and God says now. And so here I am the second day and I see the statue again. And the third day, the statue seems to be more lifelike. And what's really interesting, when I look back on this, I didn't say to myself, I had the same meditation yesterday. What's going on? That wasn't going on. Well, the statue became lifelike. And as I'm meditating, she's holding this infant. And I remember the room smelled like I was in a florist, like a bouquet of roses. I didn't know the significance of that, being a Catholic. And I got a message of this woman holding an infant, and it was to go back to Van Brunt Street and Walcott Street in South Brooklyn, and right off the corner is where my mom had a nervous breakdown when I was three. It was one of the most traumatic things I seen at that tender age, at three. Stood with me till I can almost hear it now. And for years, my elders in AA, my sponsors, and say, well, just leave that alone. You don't need to go back there. And it was this open thing that was, there was no closure on it. And this meditation, this saint turned out to be a saint, tells me, go back there and make peace with the past. So I go to my sponsor and I tell him about this. And he says, you must go. And I says, Mark, Houston was my sponsor. He was alive at the time. I said, Mark, I don't know if this means anything, but I remember smelling roses. Does that mean anything, or am I hallucinating? And he stopped everything. He's, don't talk about this. You'll talk it away. This is very significant. I spoke to a priest in Staten Island, who's one of us, and he stopped me. He says, this happened to you? And he's, tell me about it. And he shared similar remarks that Mark did about how significant this was. This was a God blast. So Mark was headed back to Texas the very next day. He says, Joe H. is in town through the weekend till next week. I want you to go to this place with Joe H. And we got in a car and off we go. When my mom had this nervous breakdown, the saint, by the way, this woman was Mother Mary. She was holding baby Jesus. That's when it came out. I was doing a retreat somewhere in Pennsylvania. And I'm 2 days, I'm by a podium and I'm telling this story. And it was a men's retreat and I start pointing towards the wall. So I happen to look at the wall, and for 2 days there's a picture of this meditation scene that I saw. There's actually a picture in churches of it. I never knew it existed. So Joe H and I get in the car and we head down to Van Brunt and Walcott Street in Red Hook, Brooklyn. And when my mom had this nervous breakdown, I was three. My brother John was about a year and change old. And so we get there, and I get out of the car, and I'm walking around, and I remember standing. I could feel the energy where I was standing when I was three. I could feel that. And I remember thinking, that little guy who was three, this all came out of a meditation, mind you, that little guy who was three has walked with that cross for a long time. I had to release him from that. Because even at 3 and 4 and 5, I felt like I could have done something to stop all of my mom's trauma. So I knelt down on a knee and I made a prayer and I talked to this little me. And then I walked over to this big wall, and I remember my mom was punching this wall. I remember her hand was kind of, there was blood on it, and the ambulance came away, those old Cadillac ambulances, they used to be out years ago, you know, and they put her in the ambulance and took her away, and I was frozen in terror, and I went over to the wall, put my hand on the wall, and I didn't think I owed my mom amends, but I let her know how truly sorry I was, that I could not stop her pain. I was only three, and I wish I could have. So I was beginning to make peace with my past. And I walked back to the car. Again, this is out of a meditation, follow instructions that I got in a meditation. If I didn't meditate, none of this would have happened. And Joe was sitting in the car having a cigarette. And I opened up my car door, and I swear, it was as if there was some sort of force field that would not let me get back in the car. I couldn't get in the car. I can't get in the car. I said, Joe, I can't get in the car. He says, well, we better do something about this. Let's pray. Something was holding me back. So Joe got out of the car, we held hands and we prayed. Now this neighborhood is a little bit funky at the time, a little rough. You got these two lunatics praying on the street corner. So Joe knows my whole story. So he's walking around and I'm just kind of like walking around. And Joe starts to laugh and says, you need to look in the concrete. Just off to my right. You know when concrete's wet, you put your initials in it? Yeah? And I says to him, what's there? He says, you need to look in the concrete. And what was written in the concrete, guys, was this. To Peter and Johnny with love and three little X's underneath it. As I said, it was me and my brother John when my mom had this experience. And at that moment, I can feel this thing happen to me, besides my eyes watering, of knowing that I'm known by my Creator. I've had many of these experiences. This was a very profound one, because there it was. And I'm so glad Joe H. was with me and shared about that at one of his last talks, because it sounds like I made it up, because it sounds really out there, especially if you're new and you haven't had these experiences. But Joe's talked about this, and it was written to Peter and Johnny with love and three little X's underneath it. And my whole world changed. Now, I've shared this lots of times. Anyone in the neighborhood knew a Peter and Johnny and just wrote it in the concrete. I mean, it's possible. I always think about that. It's coincidental. And then maybe it wasn't coincidental. That God appears to me in this meditation, gives me very clear instructions. And it wasn't the first meditation. I kept working and working and working with no expectation. No, God, give me something. It's just as a humble servant, I go into meditation and listen. And he says, now. And I listened. So when we talk in meditation, we say, you know, prayer is talking and meditation is listening. Am I listening? Am I spending enough time in meditation to listen? Am I listening for what I want to hear or what God has for me? Because sometimes I don't want to hear what God has for me. My mind and self gets involved. God just told me to date the newcomer. It's really okay to do. God told me to quit my job. And, you know, am I really listening to what God has? Am I reporting back to my sponsor? This is what happened to me in meditation. What do I do? Like I did with Mark. And Mark says, you must go. This is a direct line. So in my moments of doubt and skepticism, and I've had them, I think about those God winks that I got for fun and for free, because he has no stepchildren. That sometimes when I think I'm walking down a road and I am alone this time, I'm not. Because God over and over and over again has shown up. What if I didn't work with steps 10 and 11? I did it because I had to at the beginning. I do it because I love the effect produced by God, to honor my God, to worship my God. And just as important, when you sit down with me and I sponsor you, I have something to offer you. That's why I was hired. That's why we were hired by God. That's why we were chosen. We didn't choose God, huh? For fun and for free. That's all I got. Peace.
All right, let's thank Peter one more time, everybody. And can we have the secretary for the secretary's report?
Hi, my name is Heather, and I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. I have asked a member to come up and to read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic. I have also asked them to tell us a little bit about how they have stayed recovered over the last 3 years. Briefly, please welcome Joe.
I'm an alcoholic. My name is Joe. Sober by the grace of God, good sponsorship, rooms like this, and people like you. Recovered. We're not cured of alcoholism. Recovered but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we'd be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
Congratulations. 1940s style Big Book sponsorship from Forward to the second edition, Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober in once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experienced is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Can I have a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? Wow, that's amazing. Is there anyone that is in need of a sponsor? Can you please stand up? All right, family, let's get these guys back to God. We have some announcements. There is a intergroup picnic coming up November 4th. I have tickets for sale. They do give discounts to treatment centers. So if you are here with a treatment center, it's a really fun time. They have music, food. It's just like a whole day of fun. Tickets are $8 for one, two for 15, and three for 20. We also have a spaghetti dinner November 2nd. There's a lot of service opportunities. We have AA's Got Talent coming up, so if you have some talent, or even if you don't, you can sign up and go, you know, have some fun at a talent show. There are flyers on the back table if you really want to know how to get involved in service and to get to some other big book studies or conferences. Please join us Monday nights. We have a Big Book study meeting where the Big Book comes alive. Fellowship is at 6:30. The Big Book study starts at 7:15. We have CDs, mugs, large print Big Books, the Little Red Book, and Big Book dictionaries for sale. We meet every Thursday starting promptly at 7:15, and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. See you next week.
All right, we have tonight's sessions and all the past speakers' podcasts online for free at alcoholicsandgod.org. I'd like to invite everyone to our Monday night Big Book study. And to those whom wish to thank tonight's speaker, please line up down the center aisle. And let's close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father.
Amen. Who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done. On earth as it is in heaven, give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Amen.
Yes, the sun in June. But when you crying, you bring on the rain. So stop your sighing, baby, and be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling. Keep on smiling, baby. And I hope the world's mine.
Everywhere I go, Let it shine, 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 let it shine. This way.